Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here's the Media Project with Pete Seeger, of course, getting things underway in the right frame of mind. Newspapermen are such interesting people. Thank you very much. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with you with Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and Dr. Kaylin Brown, who runs the journalism program at the College of St. Rose in Albany. How are you doing, Kaylin?
I'm doing great today, Rex.
Great today? Yeah. So there aren't a lot of students around in this time of the year, right?
There are not many students, but a lot is happening on campus.
Oh.
Preparing for next month.
Whoa.
When they return.
Here it comes.
Wait! Is it really next month? I mean, is it going to start all over? What happened to this summer? I'm so depressed.
Yeah. How can you tell when Alan's depressed or when he's elevated? It's hard to tell. It's just, it's all the real Alan. Yeah. But you can tell, President Trump is not like you, Alan, in that...
I should say.
So what do you think about this guy? Let's take this recent example. Here's a guy who talks about the failing New York Times, constantly attacks the media for being enemies of the people, and then he sits down for a revealing interview in the Oval Office with three New York Times correspondents, which he makes real news. You know, he says, I wish I didn't have Jeff Sessions as Attorney General and that kind of thing. What do you make of that?
Well, I have always believed that Trump is a guy who operates just on the concept of almost electrical impulse. He gets an impulse and he does something. He's a guy who likes to be liked, but he's anything but liked in this country right now. And so his approach to the press is, maybe I'll throw them a bone. So he walks into the back of the plane and he talks to them for a while after having castigated them. But this is consistent with his personality. Today he sends out warm, warm wishes to John McCain, and the press dutifully reports that. On the other hand, he's also the guy who questioned whether John McCain was a hero because he was captured. And I don't admire people who are captured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, do we remember that? And when somebody is writing an article, Rex or Kaylin, do you think that when they're writing an article, they should always reference past behavior rather than say, President Trump today said warm wishes? But does the press say, yeah, okay, warm wishes, but you're the guy who said, and remind people, you're the guy who said that he was anything but a hero because he got captured?
So does that negate what the president says about wishing Senator McCain well? It does not negate it to put it in context. The news has an obligation to put the information in context. And so if the president has turned around on Senator McCain, thankfully in this instance, we should make note of that. But we need to remember that the president did not always hold Senator McCain in such high regard.
Well, first of all, if you believe that he's turned around, I have a bridge down the lower end of Manhattan that I'd like to sell you. It goes to Brooklyn. What? Now you have to defend her like you always do, right?
No, I'm just trying to get a word in edgewise.
Well,
I think that we, you know, it's very nice of you to have your soliloquy here, Alan. But my concern is when you use the word always, when you say, shouldn't the press always make note of this? I think always is always a bad term in journalism because we, with every story, with every piece is different from every other piece. And so you really ill serve your readers, listeners, viewers, if you apply hard and fast rules to everything you do.
Well, but I think context is very important, as Professor Brown has said. I think it really is very, very important. And if this guy is being a rank hypocrite and a jerk, then I think it's up to the press to remind everybody.
But there's so much.
He may not be a hypocrite. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
He may not be hypocritical in wishing him well. One would hope that empathy would win out in this instance.
Yes, but
so he is wishing Senator McCain well, and I take that at face value. I actually believe what the president said, that he is wishing him well.
Well, aren't you a ray of sunshine?
Yes, I am.
So what about this business that the president goes about making warm relations with reporters whom he castigates in public? And it's been observed that, unlike other politicians, this was Robert Dalek, who's a presidential historian, who made note of the fact that one of the differences between Trump and other successful politicians like JFK and FDR is that they would vent their spleen in private, but then in public they would project a more humorous and civilized face. Trump is the other way around. He does all this stuff in public about, oh, the horrible press, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, he comes to the back of Air Force One.
Once we know of him in modern times.
But then he goes, you remember right after the election when he went to the New York Times editorial board and sucked up to them. And I mean, he very much wants the approval of the New York Times. You know, he has very much been, it's probably his personal insecurity, but he tries very hard to win the favor of the very people that he's attacking in public.
And you say, I'm involved in a soliloquy?
gentlemen.
Just trying to help you understand things. But with this New York Times interview with three political reporters in the Oval Office, or the Oval, as they say, one of the cool things is that the Times, and this shows how things are different from previous eras, the Times not only released a full transcript of the interview, but also a tape, an audio tape of it, so that everybody could use. And that's very different from the way we all would have behaved 5 or 6 years ago, even.
It is a phenomenon that I am increasingly aware of, the sharing instinct. Look, you know, the Times Union, a very good paper, you know, does good reporting every day.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you show up here. You know, your nose isn't quite up in the air like it used to be. You appreciate the fact that there are benefits from this kind of cooperation, and we see it all the time. We're, for example, there's a mayoral campaign that is about to start in Albany, and we were approached by one of the television stations to say, could we do this together?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, yeah, sure, why not? Nobody's ever going to say, well, I heard that Channel 13 in Albany, New York, was cooperating with them, and who knows whether that's going to take away from people who will listen to us on our air because it's also on somebody else's air. It's a new world, as you say, Rex.
Mm-hmm.
Properly so, and I want to congratulate you on that.
Why, thank you.
Collaboration is a good thing. The Times Union and our students at St. Rose are collaborating on a project, so.
That's so self-serving of you, Kim.
St. Rose students first.
Absolutely. There we go. So one of the ways in which this president distinguishes himself from all of his predecessors is his aggressive use of Twitter. There's an argument being made. Wired magazine actually did an editorial making the case that the president should be banned from tweeting, that he consistently violates the terms of service that Twitter has published, up to and including incitement of violence. So, you know, wouldn't that be an interesting thing?
Sure. And who's going to enforce that one?
This question has tortured me since he first started to deploy Twitter to his favor. I do not know the answer to this, but it is an excellent question to be asking. At what point do we say enough is enough? But at the same time, it's a little bit like watching an accident on the highway. Everyone wants to look and to see what is going to happen next. And there's value in his utterances being made public so that we can choose ourselves how to decide what he's about. This is where I fall on him, because I've been watching how he behaves and reading.
One of the big problems with Donald Trump, I think, is that there is no enforcer. He breaks norms all the time. Let's just go from the point of view of Twitter. They're the one people who say, no, we're not going to put you on. We're not going to let you do this anymore. And they're not going to do that. Why would they? In fact, Twitterism has now been something that is happening all over the world due to Donald Trump.
Twitterism.
Their brand has been mightily helped by Trump. So they're not going to say, no, you can't come on here. And who's going to do that? The Supreme Court? Forget it.
Well, what do you think about this? The Knight First Amendment Institute, which is an entity now at Columbia Journalism School, is suing Trump to force him to unblock Twitter followers whom he has blocked on the grounds that Twitter is a public forum and the president can't constitutionally discriminate against citizens who wish to receive his tweets. You know, that's a fairly remarkable notion that Twitter is now so much a public forum that it's almost a public utility.
Let me refer you to question time in the British Parliament. When somebody gets up and asks the next question, and that next question has already been answered, the Prime Minister always says, I would refer you to my answer in point number 6. I would. I mean, who's going to enforce that? Don't you see?
Well,
what? You look perplexed.
It's going to continue through the courts, but it will take years. So he will have used Twitter to great effect, likely.
Absolutely.
By the time the courts make the decision.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Columbia Journalism Review people and the Knight people, and they're good people. They're very good. And as you know, Rex graduated first in his class at the Columbia School of Journalism.
Yeah.
In his master's. Yeah, he did.
Isn't that amazing?
He did.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was many, many years ago,
I've mentioned that from time to time.
See, Alan can do this because I don't have a PhD. You guys do. And so
you
guys
have an Ivy League diploma.
But again, the question is, you know, it gets them something and say, oh, look, here's Knight, you know, they're doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you really think it's going to bear fruit? Nah.
While we're still on Donald Trump, look at what's going on in the White House. We have press briefings that have now gone off camera. The president's aides don't allow cameras to go, and often they don't allow sound. Although there's a Democratic congressman from Connecticut, Jim Himes. Is he one of the guys you interview, Alan?
No, he's in a far down towards Connecticut.
Anyway, he has proposed legislation to mandate that the White House hold at least 2 on-camera press briefings per week. Now, of course, this is not...
I refer you to question 4. Yeah, right. You got...
Right.
You can imagine that Speaker of that House saying, okay, we're going to take up this bill. You know, again, it's good publicity. It's a good press release.
Right. But the problem with these press briefings is that the president's aides often are, how would you say it, at variance with reality.
Well, wait a second.
How'd you like their reputations to have to get in front of the country? I think that this is a very measured decision by that White House to choose not to always be out in front, TV recording or audio recording. That is so well played on their side because they know they don't always play well.
They were getting killed, let's face it.
Exactly.
They were just getting killed. And they were fodder for Saturday Night Live. The only good thing that ever happened to them was that Saturday Night Live goes on vacation.
So it's a shame they don't have thicker skins. Those of us in the media have pretty thick skins. I mean, you develop it over time, and that shouldn't be a bother. But evidently, Saturday Night Live, I agree with you, truly is. And that may be the impetus of why they started shutting down press conferences, which is pathetic.
He doesn't have poll numbers in the lower 30s for nothing.
Yeah.
People watch that
stuff.
Still,
I prefer to get my White House utterances vetted and filtered through the media I respect and trust rather than straight on and straight up. So
that,
I would.
That's so elitist of you.
I don't know. It's self-protection and mental health issues are at stake.
So here's what happened, and I think this is why Rex brought this up, even though he may not remember to make the point. Somebody from an obscure news site goes into one of the meetings, and despite the rule that you're not allowed to send out audio live, she does it. And that just happened, I think, yesterday as we speak. Of course, there is hell to pay that she did it. Now, I am sure they're going to exclude her from the briefing.
Yeah, probably
so. Because she broke the rules.
She was just using Periscope Live, which is a really easy service that is readily available. And there you go. It just immediately goes out to your followers.
I'm interested in why Alan is so interested in that she did this.
Well, because I think it's very important that we have such terrible bias and gender inequality in this country that we point out when somebody has done a remarkable and courageous thing.
Thank you.
Don't you see?
Well, there you go.
I see it
there
now,
you go.
But I wasn't sure.
So what are you supposed to do, Alan? This goes to your question about context when there are lies from the podium in the White House.
Yeah.
This is not surprising. But even when the president says things like, we've signed more bills, and I'm talking about through the legislature, than any president ever. For a while, Harry Truman had us, and now I think we have everybody. This is not true.
So 60% over, Rex, if I may just interrupt to try to get a word in edgewise here. So that while it is true that that is happening, people go out and poll in the hinterlands, those people who love Trump. And they say, we don't care. We don't care about the Russians. We don't care that he makes stuff up. We don't care any of this stuff. That 33 to 36% has not moved yet. And so it doesn't matter if he is corrected day after day after day in all our news media.
It's still important that He is corrected, though. It's important the media continues to set the record straight, even if there are people like in, for instance, Grand Junction, Colorado, The New Yorker just did an excellent piece. Excellent, right. So about Trump supporters living in Grand Junction and their continued support of the president and why they continue to support him. That was a great story to see that perspective and to understand why people continue to stay behind him. They have a viewpoint that is not always so far removed from those of us who are WAMC listeners.
This is Bannonism, if there ever was. I mean, Steve Bannon believes he won the last time with those folks strategically allocated, as in gerrymandered districts, as in, you know, the Electoral College, and he won that way. And Bannon is basically telling him, I am sure that's the only way you're going to win again. With those people.
To play to that base.
That's right.
You know, that sounds like a long game that it requires, assuming that the president makes really thoughtful, rational decisions about how he's going to do things. And I think your point earlier about the fact that he just sort of goes for the moment might be a bit more accurate. He says, you know, I think I'm going to go to the back of the plane and talk to those people. It seems to me that he's more careless about the way he says things than calculating.
Well, you may be right. And a lot of people have been talking about this. I heard one opinion maker say the other day, is he that good that he's playing three-dimensional chess, or is it impulsive? That's the question, right? And I point one thing out to you, Rex, that you and Dr. Brown and so many others may miss. He's president of the United States.
No.
And he got there somehow.
He's president and we're not. Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But
right.
Yes, and he likes to focus on the winning a lot, too much. That's why we get those false statistics, because it's about a contest. Why don't we try to fix it?
Right. Who's bigger? Who's better? And that sort of thing. So, you know, the interesting thing is that in the six-month mark of his presidency, he's held only one general press conference. That was back on February 16th. He takes questions every now and then at a handful of appearances of foreign heads of state, but that's generally two questions or sometimes even just one. You know, by this point in their presidencies, listen to this. This is according to the American Presidency Project. Barack Obama and Bill Clinton had each held 8 solo press conferences. George W. Bush had held 3. And even Ronald Reagan, who had been shot in the chest 2 months into his time in office, had gotten in 3 press conferences by the 4th of July.
And that's why Ronald Reagan was beloved. And a smart guy. You may not like him. You may not agree with him. I sure don't. But he knew what he was doing, and he was in control of himself, and he used his assets.
Well, and was he productive? You know, certainly our presidents hold press conferences when they have something productive to report. One of the reasons our president may not be doing that as often is because what has been achieved?
Yeah.
What has been achieved since January 20th?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. He, of course, he says more than any president in history. And a lot of people, you know, we get letters to the editor from people saying that this president has been just really wonderful. And you people are not giving him credit for being so productive. He's the hardest working president we've ever had. I had a letter from someone recently telling me that. So,
you know, that's a very interesting thing you say, because I asked your deputy, Mike Spain, when he was over here the other day, do you guys get angry letters like we do? And he looked at me in utter disbelief.
Yes,
we do. Do you think we're getting more now than ever because of the polarization?
Yes, absolutely so. And I do think that it actually is having a long-term effect on our credibility and even on our viability. And that's why I think that what Donald Trump is doing to tear down institutions of the press is ultimately unpatriotic, because it is putting at risk the First Amendment, which I think is the foundation of democracy, free speech, free expression. And by insisting that those institutions that are bringing news to people are lying to you over and over, he's really trying to tear us down.
And to say nothing of his approach towards the peaceful transference of power in this country by saying all elections are rigged and claiming that these, not all, but elections are rigged and we have to put up with that. And he's pulling that one down also. Rex, while you sometimes lean to the pompous, I have to say I agree with you on what you just said.
Lean to the pompous.
Well, I don't agree with the pomposity part, but I do agree with the part about the journalism is critical to our democracy.
Yeah. Well, of course you do. You teach that subject.
Yes, I do.
And to your students.
But I love that subject.
And I know.
I adhere to it and am trying to train students to go out and do the best job they can and get them interested and get them down to the state capitol and in our town and city halls so that they can see democracy work, even though it's not always exciting or sexy.
I hope you don't take this in the wrong way, but you are very special.
Thank you.
I mean that. You're doing a good job. Don't you see?
Here, word. And you know it, word. Yes, I agree. Excellent. You know, but the problem is, too, that this permeates the relations with the press everywhere. After the senators had decided not to continue forward with the health care bill, Capitol Police blocked reporters from following them and asking them questions. You know, that's a little thing, but reporters have always been able to move around Capitol Hill freely and talk to legislators. And this is not happening, you know, and we have the great incident, of course, during the special election out in Wyoming, where the congressman the night before the election punched out a reporter. Right, Greg Gianforte, and he's, I think that we just see so much of this now, and we do get a lot more of it. We get irate, angry letters from people insisting that they can't trust us.
In my case, they personalize them. They call me words like tyrant and other things, and I'm sure they believe it.
Yeah.
The press needs to keep doing its job. We need to keep writing stories and keep getting the truth out there and educating more people about what we do and how we do it. I think there are exists a lack of familiarity on the part of the public and how journalism actually works. Often students come into our classrooms and they expect it, journalism is something other than it is. It is not just
and
sitting
what's the number
at
one?
A desk and being in front of a screen and reading a teleprompter. The hard work and the pulling up the sleeve and getting that work done is exhausting, especially intellectually exhausting work, and it is so fulfilling. So it's a great path to take, but I don't think the general public, why would they be aware of it? I mean, they may not have a reason to know about it, but we should teach them.
Well, and even if people who get their news, a new study shows that people get their news from social or search. You know, if you're getting a lot of your news from Facebook, most people usually don't remember the news organization that published it. So real journalism outlets don't get credit for their work. The result being that people are as likely to take fake news, genuine fake news, that is, as they are credible stuff.
So, Rex, you brought up the FN.
The fake news.
And that's what, that's what F is.
I feel that the media does itself perhaps a disservice by using that term.
Using the term,
The same way it uses the term paywall. I'd like to reject both of those terms and suggest we find something to substitute. Because there's no such thing as a paywall from my perspective. People are getting paid for service. That's a fee.
But we all understand what it means. Paywall means that you can't get Rex's product for free. You have to subscribe.
Yep. Words matter. We pay for subscriptions. We pay for a bottle of water, a cup of coffee. And so we also pay to get access to our news. That's not a wall, especially in this climate. No walls. Do not equate any wall with the current wall situation in this country.
Wow, you're really getting fired up.
This is great. We love passion in journalism. This is an important lesson for you journalism students out there. Kaitlin Brown exemplifying it. Passion, an important part of journalism because it takes a lot of energy, as you say. It really does. That's about all we have time for today, after all. We're going to have to call it quits. Alan Shartok, Kaitlin Brown, and Rex Smith, we are the Media Project this week, and we hope you will join us here again, and anytime, by the way, at WAMC.org. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kaitlin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.